Jay Carney, who has referred to all of this activity as legal, ethical, and wise. Then you have John Brennan, the author of the manual on these killings, and you have a Senate Intelligence Committee that's perfectly willing to play along with all of this. So this is the disturbing aspect of this part.
Mel
that
Goodman,
in the appeal for the committee is advocacy.
Mel Goodman, we have to wrap. You're a former CIA and State Department analyst. You were in the leading voices who testified against Brennan 4 years ago when President Obama wanted him to be CIA chief there. Then he withdrew his name because of all of the protest. What's changed in 4 years?
What's changed in 4 years is that we have a president who is also a constitutional lawyer who has ignored the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment with regard to speedy trials, with regard to due process, with regard to illegal searches and seizures, with regard to torture and abuse to a certain extent, because the country is still practicing renditions.
We have 5 seconds.
Rendering people to other countries. So this is what needs to be monitored, and we don't have an Office of the Inspector General who's conducting oversight within the agency, and you don't have a Senate Intelligence Committee willing to conduct oversight.
Now we have to leave it there.
The CIA.
Mel Goodman, former CIA analyst, author of the book National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism. That does it for the broadcast of Action Now, produced by Mike Berger, Nate Feltz, Aaron Mate, Noreen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, and Malkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn. My name is Jay Koronick. Happy to be with you today from Henry Ford Community College. Yes, the college is closed today. So in case you didn't know that, yes, it is closed. And by golly, we just want you to know that everything is good and clear. It is not a snow emergency day in Dearborn. Okay, so you don't have to move your cars off the street. At least I didn't hear any sirens. I didn't get any notification. We only had 2 to 5 inches, like they said. Okay, and at this point, because it's about 30 degrees outside now as we speak at 1 p.m. on Friday, February, what is today? Anyway, it is the 8th, yes. How soon we forget. And it is 2013, folks. So do not be panicked and scared too much. Obviously, take care with your driving. Slow down a little bit. It's still wet, slushy. There are some wet spots out there and icy spots, no doubt. But just to let you know, it's not a snow emergency today, to the best of my knowledge. And I don't expect that that's going to change, because they are not predicting any further snow for us, at least through tomorrow. It's supposed to also hit about 30 degrees. So at least on the streets and the sidewalks, most of the snow that did come down early this morning, all of a sudden, is going to be clear. So that's the weather report. That's the good news. We're going to go ahead and do our show. Many of our volunteers are coming in to Henry Ford Community College, even though it's closed, to do their shows today. Some are not, and that's totally fine, totally understandable. We don't want anyone to give up their life for WHFR, but some of us take it that seriously. So here I am, and let's get started with our theme music, where we're going to dig deeper into local news and alternative views. Hi, this is WHFR. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is February the 8th, 2013. My name is Jay Koronick. Happy to be with you today. After a week of the flu, I try to time all my illness in between Fridays so that you can always expect to have my voice here, whether you're looking forward to it or not, of course. And I'm feeling much better. Thank you. If you didn't know, Although if you tuned in last Friday, you probably heard in the background once, I think, directly on mic, my extreme coughing. And that might even still return today. My usual co-host, Dennis Reimars, is over at one of our local area hospitals. He was vigorously shoveling snow this morning and apparently hurt his back a little bit. I think he'll be fine, but decided to have that checked out since also he couldn't sit down. And I don't think there's too many cars that are designed for driving standing up. I told him he could, you know, host the show with me standing up. I just take his chair out from under him. But he obviously needed to get to the hospital. So here I am. We have a couple of very interesting stories, and I do have a press conference that can take up some of the hour, but it's pretty important. It's about the Medicare expansion package for Michigan. Some of you that do not have paid medical care will soon be able to, if, of course, it all goes through our legislature. And at this conference, which just took place 2 days ago, Wednesday, in Lansing, Michigan, Governor Snyder's right there, and he has some introductory comments. People from his office have statements, and they even answer some questions towards the end. So I do want to share that with you. That's our friends at MIRS, the Michigan Information Resource Service, I believe, MIRS.com. You can go to the website if you'd like. But it's a very good quality press conference, and it's talking about things that maybe haven't quite happened yet, but the governor is behind it, and supposedly his friendly cohort Republican legislators will also endorse everything the way that he wants. Why? Because, oh, it all seems so good for everybody, at least everybody attending the conference, who was making statements there. Wide range of different groups, and including the governor himself, saying it just got to happen. It's just so much better for everybody if everybody under the proposed plan, which is, yes, the Affordable Care Act. This is coming about because of, and only because of, the Affordable Care Act passed in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago that will expand health care to a lot of people who don't have it. Not everyone, nope, and not paying for everything, nope. That's not the way we do things in America, but certainly this is an advantage for everybody who's going to be additionally receiving these benefits or receiving these benefits certainly for the first time. And so we want to make sure that you understand that. Our condolences, just received this yesterday from Dearborn City Hall. It is in unpatched.com today. A former Dearborn elected official, George Hart, has passed away. And Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. Has issued this press conference about his service to Dearborn. Hart did represent Dearborn as a city councilman, a Wayne County commissioner, and a state legislator from this area. And he passed away January 31st in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was 88. John B. O'Reilly Jr., our mayor, was Mr. Hart's chief of staff in Lansing 1983-82 and again briefly in 87 after chairing his 1986 campaign. He remembers the gregarious Hart as a people-oriented politician who loved shaking hands and working the crowd and who was usually in tune with his constituency. Literally in tune, by the way. He was known as the quote-unquote singing senator. In fact, for a while, remember when WHFR just got on the air back in the mid-80s, we received a cassette from him. It was Hart singing, then Representative Hart, I believe. Was he senator then? Well, whatever. He was singing his song that he was recommending as our new state song for Michigan. That didn't happen. But we played that on the air for you, didn't we, George? And, of course, I remember doing many interviews with him throughout Dearborn because, yes, he did go out and meet and greet the people probably more than any other elected representative in my memory. So sometimes you didn't even expect you're going to meet him, but there he was. Certainly he did spend many, many years of service to the community. Certainly some people may remember him somewhat differently than that, but he did serve Dearborn City, by the way, literally as councilman from 58 to 71, so that's no small accomplishment right there. What is that? 13 years. And then he was on the Wayne County Board of Commissioners, and he remained with the county until 1978. In 78, he ran and was elected to the Senate in Michigan. In his bid for re-election in 82, he was defeated by Patrick McCullough. McCullough was there, of course, just one term. And in between, George went back to the city council in 85 for a term that actually, well, he was elected and the term began in 86, but he resigned the council to run back for the Senate. And this time he defeated Bill Runco. Okay, so I guess maybe McCullough was still there at that point. He won re-election to the Senate in 90, 94, 98, and stayed in the seat until the end of that term in 2002. A public servant is gone, and certainly he had a full and complete life. But we just wanted to mention his passing to you in case you hadn't heard yet. Also, just a little bit of news coming outside of the local papers from this week. I had mentioned a few weeks ago we did an interview with people from Michigan Peace Team. And also mentioned to you the several other Michigan groups that are working for peace at the city, state, national and international levels, each a little bit different. The other one was Michigan Peace Action, or Peace Action of Michigan. And then there was also Pax Christi, which is the group of advocating peace and working for peace and justice through the Catholic Church, which began locally and is still sort of locally supervised. But there was also brought to my attention a group called Citizens for Peace, and every month they do have events locally. And so if you just want informational events, you can go to and listen and find out about things. Their events for February, which I just received, we just missed the first one because it was last night, Thursday, February 7th at Livonia Civic Center Library. That was just for information, the kind of events they have. World Religions adjunct right here at Henry Ford Community College, Professor Grant Schaefer, Dr. Schaefer, led a discussion and shared two short videos featuring Rabbi, a pastor, and an imam. Sounds like it should be a joke there somewhere, but and they call themselves the Interfaith Amigos. And anyway, they will present their views on the truths and untruths in their three religions. It was a free event, and Livonia Civic Center Library, which I'll mention again, there's an event coming up next week, too, there, sponsored by Citizens for Peace. That's in 5 Mile Road, okay? 32777 5 Mile Road. Coming up next Tuesday, February 12th there, Citizens for Peace meeting is called the Charter for Compassion. Colleen Mills, president of Citizens for Peace, will share information about Karen Armstrong's award-winning idea of a charter for compassion. Kalamazoo's Fetzer Institute provided $100,000 to implement it, and come to the meeting to find out about the impact this great idea has had in our country and around the world. Meeting will begin at 7 p.m. at the Unity of Livonia. And that is a religious belief and practice. I won't go into the details, but don't think you necessarily want to call it a unity church. Okay? Some people wouldn't use that phrase. No disservice at all. My grandmother received communications and was basically a believer in unity. So I'm all for it as one of many choices for religious observances. It doesn't preach death and destruction at all, so it's fine by me. Okay. Or killing in any way, for any reason. In any event, Unity of Livonia is on 5 Mile Road, but it's at 28,660 5 Mile Road, 7 o'clock next Tuesday night, Charter for Compassion discussion starting, and you can hear Colleen Mills, president of Citizens for Peace, sharing information about the idea. Will this one work? Now, next Wednesday, the 13th, at 11 a.m. during the day. So if you don't like getting out at night, maybe during the day at 11 a.m., go to the Livonia Senior Center. That's 15218 Farmington Road, Livonia Senior Center. And find out from, first of all, see a documentary feature from director Tom Shadyak. His film is called I Am. And he has directed films like Liar, Liar, and also Bruce Almighty. Okay. Comedies, if you know, with that funny face guy, Jim, what's his name? Yeah. Anyway, he is exploring answers in his film to the root causes of our world problems. And he asks two questions. What's wrong with the world? And what can we do to fix it? And so pretty good. The encore presentation of the film, I Am, Livonia Senior Center, Farmington Road, on next Wednesday, February 13th at 11 a.m. And all events are free and open to the public. And you can just Google Citizens for Peace and get to their website if you want more information. Okay. Let's see here. Here's an event for tomorrow. 8th Annual Valentine's Day event. And even though it's at a church, Christ the King Parish Church on Grand River in Detroit, it's a friend of Joanne Korchinska's, our Highway 61 blues DJ, and he's a featured poet, Michael Jones, actually called the Dancing Poet. Might even be the grade K through 8th Christ the King School kids singing. So there's poetry, singing, dancing, musicians. Welcome tomorrow at 7 p.m., Christ the King Parish Church, 20,800 Grand River in Detroit. Free food, free admission, and free parking. And co-sponsored by the Detroit Writers Guild and also Poet and Writers Magazine, too. So it says Celebrate Love with Poetry, their 8th annual Valentine's Day event. Okay, let's see here. So now on the new WHFR Journal, I think it's important to do the, as announced, the press conference about Medicaid expansion here in Michigan. Maybe you get some of your questions answered. Maybe you'll be able to respond appropriately to friends and family who are giving you questions about this whole thing. Here we go. WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Sparrow. My name is Joe Ruth. I'm the Chief Operating Officer, and we are honored today to host this news conference. I'm really pleased to see this kind of turnout to discuss caring for the most vulnerable people in the state of Michigan. So thank you for being here. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Spencer Johnson, the president of the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, to the podium. Spencer?
Thank you, Joe.
We appreciate Sparrow being willing to host us today. As Joe said, my name is Spence Johnson. I'm the president of the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, which is headquartered here in Lansing. And I'd like to thank everyone, first of all, for being here to support our Expand Medicaid Coalition. Michigan has a unique opportunity now to improve the lives of hundreds of thousands of their citizens and save money at the same time. Today we are here to urge our state legislators to help us save lives and save dollars by extending health insurance coverage to thousands of Michigan residents through a federally funded Medicaid expansion program. As we move along, you're going to hear from other members of the coalition, and they'll be able to give their perspective to you on their particular part of health care delivery. Michigan hospitals have long been committed to a mission of accepting everyone, insured or not, to be treated and cared for. Unfortunately, and this question came up earlier from one of the media, how would this benefit hospitals and most importantly benefit their patients? The ER has become the primary access point to health care delivery for 1.2 Michiganians who don't have health care insurance. And many of these services turn into real emergencies that could have been prevented or improved if they had health insurance and access to routine medical care. Now I'd like to introduce what I consider in healthcare right now for us in Michigan, our Chief Strategic and Policy Officer, Governor Rick Steger.
Spencer, thanks for that welcome, and thanks for what the Hospital Association does. And I want to thank Sparrow for hosting this event today. It's great to be here. And I'm proud to be here with my partners. I'm here with my partner, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, Director Jim Haveman, and Budget Director John Nixon. So we've got quite a crew here, but we really crashed this event, if you want to know the truth of it. I want to thank all these outstanding organizations and people for wanting to hold the press conference today. And the reason they wanted to hold the press conference is they wanted to encourage our support for going ahead with expanding Medicaid. We thought there was a simpler answer. We think they're right. So the easy answer is just to join them and say, we're all here to support the expansion of Medicaid, and that's the message I'll be banking tomorrow on the budget message. Trying to show there's a pre-dog year version of things. You can go even faster than dog years. But it's an important thing. And it's not something to joke about because it's about people's lives. When you stop and look at Medicaid expansion, the real issue is how do we give better care at a lower cost? And that's the objective behind all this. And if you stop and look at what the situation involves, this is a case where the numbers show 46% of the uninsured in Michigan will be covered by this, in terms of providing health care opportunities to them. That's huge. Because as Spencer said, the real issue, when I looked at it, the analysis we went through is their capacity. Because for many of those in the uncompensated care side, those that are uninsured, they're using the emergency room as their primary health care mechanism. That's a flawed system. And that's a system we can't sustain, either because of the health care they're not getting in terms of a primary care model, or the cost to our society. So this is a real opportunity to step up and say, let's do a patient-centered medical home model for these individuals, and we're talking hundreds of thousands. We're talking 307,000 to start with, the number growing to almost 500,000 people within a few years, that then can have a patient-centered medical home model to provide better care at a lower cost and really leverage our entire healthcare system to work together to make that happen. That's an exciting outcome, and that should be the focus that we need to move forward with. One thing I will share with you that I will be talking about more tomorrow is, in the early years of this program, the way the federal government has designed it, it actually will be saving the state of Michigan significant dollars in the range of in excess of $200 million a year. I'm calling for something that traditionally has not been called for. Those savings are not all to be spent. One thing I will be talking about tomorrow is to take half of those savings and to set up a health savings account, just like we would in our family. To say, let's put those dollars aside to save to the future. To use in the point where we will actually have to start contributing to the cost within a few years. And we have some uncertainty as to where all the federal government may go. But I believe it's prudent to create a health savings account with significant dollars in it that then can offset those costs when the state has to start paying. If you actually model that out, what we've modeled out is it would be before the year 2035 before Michigan would actually have to start putting dollars towards this program if it stayed as is. That's a huge opportunity, again, planning not just for today but for a future that's bright for all Michiganders in providing better health care. So that's something I would share with you. The other thing I would say is this is very exciting today. I think this is an important step in Michigan in terms of moving forward with care for people that need it. But I would also say this is not the stopping of the efforts that we need to continue in healthcare. There are a number of other things I'll be talking about, some of those tomorrow, or the Lieutenant Governor will in our budget message. We need to keep working healthcare issues, mental health issues, the whole spectrum of different issues. So I don't view this as the end point by any means. This is an opportunity to continue to give better care to Michiganders. But in that context, let's stop for a minute and say, what is this all about? It's a win for all. It's a win at the individual level for the person that currently does not have insurance, that's currently being forced to go to an ER. They're not getting the help. They're not having the opportunity to have the livelihood that they could otherwise have if they were in a patient-centered medical home. The important thing from the societal level is that we look at that and say that's valuable by its own right, and that's important. But we have a bigger obligation also to say, let's build a smarter system around that. And so it's just not about getting care, but getting better quality care and thoughtful care and preventative care so they can avoid those ER visits or those very expensive processes because we're doing preventive medicine. So let's work together as a team. And the best part is, I appreciate Spencer's introduction, but the real healthcare team's standing right here on both sides of me, and so I'm going to turn it over to the experts. Now I'll be happy to help answer some questions, but we have a great group of professionals that can speak to how well the system can work, and I think they're excited by it. So I'm going to turn it over. Kim?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Governor. I'm Kim Sibilski. I'm the Executive Director of the Michigan Primary Care Association. We are the statewide association of community health centers serving over 600,000 Michigan residents in over 220 delivery sites throughout the state. The Michigan Primary Care Association and Michigan's community health centers applaud Governor Snyder for recommending the expansion of Medicaid for more Michigan adults, most of whom are working in low-wage jobs without health insurance. As Michigan's largest network of safety net providers, health centers are in Michigan communities delivering care to people in greatest need of health care and human services. Every day, health center providers see patients who have delayed seeking care because they have no insurance. And these people are suffering with health conditions that could have been prevented or made less painful. With early and appropriate care, the cost of care can be greatly reduced. And evidence shows that children of parents with coverage seek and receive more and better care. Expanding Medicaid will also allow health centers to care for more people who lack a primary care provider. Research shows that having a regular source of health care keeps people healthy, out of the emergency room, and results in improved quality of life and productivity. We're pleased to work with our coalition partners in urging Michigan's legislature to support Governor Snyder's recommendation to accept the federal government's offer to pay for expanding Medicaid in Michigan. Expansion is a major step towards ensuring all Michigan residents have access to comprehensive, affordable health care. It will improve the quality of life for Michigan families. It will save the state money, and it will drive down the long-term costs of our health care system. Michigan's federally qualified health centers stand ready and have capacity to care for Michigan's uninsured. And we are eager to serve those soon to be Medicaid eligible, working adults and families that are our neighbors and friends. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, everybody. I'm Dr. Ken Elmasian, and I'm the president-elect of the Michigan State Medical Society. And I want to thank the governor, and especially Director Haberman as well, and their bold vision on where we're going in this direction. You know, the bottom line is everybody deserves good, quality health care. And that is something that I think we can deliver here in Michigan by expanding the Medicaid program. As physicians, we know in particular that those without insurance frequently delay their care. And by doing so, they end up being sicker, going to the emergency room, which is a highly inefficient and cost-ineffective way to take care of the people of this state. Prevention, early detection, and treatment are far better prescription than procrastination. Making people sicker and driving health care costs up is something we all need to be against. If we reject this, I'm afraid we're going to take steps backwards, and we'd be faced with the same problems we have today. And that would be about 1 million people uninsured. It would be a severe lack of our mental health services and an abysmal Medicaid rate that continues to hinder access to current Medicaid for recipients. As a medical society, and it's been alluded to, we have the capacity to take care of that. There's been some recent data showing that our physician-led healthcare teams are able to handle that capacity, and we're willing to certainly enthusiastically do so. I don't think we have a choice here. I think there's an important opportunity for us, and I think we need to move forward with this. And again, I applaud the governor and the director for their vision. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Visna, and I'm the director of the Michigan Association of Community Mental Health Boards. Representing the 46 community mental health boards and 65 provider organizations, which deliver mental health, substance use disorder, and developmental disabilities services across our entire state. On behalf of our members, I want to thank the organizers of this conference, press conference, for the opportunity to speak to the importance of Medicaid expansion to improve access to mental health and substance use disorder services in our state. Due to the recent tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, improving our state and national mental health services has taken a much-needed front seat in policy and budget discussions. In his State of the State address, Governor Snyder called for an increase in mental health awareness efforts and increased support for prevention and early intervention efforts. The House Republican Action Plan, announced last week, called for solutions to address barriers to accessing mental health systems. That same plan further states that House Republicans will continue to encourage a more uniform mental health services program statewide so that citizens can rely on the same quality services county to county. We want to thank the governor for his support of Medicaid expansion, and we urge the legislature to consider. If you want to provide increased support for mental health services, if you want to remove barriers to accessing quality mental health services, and if you want to provide more uniform mental health services statewide, expand Medicaid. Cuts to general fund support for mental health and substance use disorder services over the past decade have resulted in a lack of access, reduction of services, and creation of waiting lists for persons without Medicaid. As a result, persons with emerging mental health and substance use disorders are not seen for care and instead end up in emergency room and hospital settings, law enforcement and criminal justice proceedings, and in some cases, homeless on the street. Settings where they do not belong and settings which are not equipped to provide the types of mental health and substance use disorder services they need. So again, we urge the legislature to consider. If you want many of these individuals out of these settings and instead in community-based mental health and substance use disorder services with providers trained to address their problems more effectively and more efficiently, expand Medicaid. As is the case with physical illnesses, prevention and early intervention treatment for behavioral health disorders is the most cost-effective care. Expand Medicaid. It will save lives, and it will save money. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Fowler, President and CEO of the Small Business Association of Michigan. We have about 18,000 members all across the state, and we've been involved in health policy for over 40 years. When I was a boy, I remember sitting...
We're going to pause the press conference from 2 days ago in Lansing, talking about the proposals to expand Medicare coverage in Michigan, Medicaid coverage in Michigan, according to the Affordable Care Act. And there's proposals supported by our governor, and he's been speaking in that. So we're going to return to that. But about this time, a little bit past half hour, I wanted you to know, if you tuned in late, my name is Jay Kornick. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday. That is February the 8th, 2013. And this is an important issue, I think, for all the people of the state. You'll hear some counter arguments such as, oh, nobody can afford it, or, you know, Republican legislators aren't for it, so it's got no chance to pass. But I thought all the arguments are here, including Governor Snyder's. And he does get things right sometimes, although, you know, yours truly has disagreed with him violently, verbally violently anyway, last December for some of the things that he supported and that he made possible that are now laws. However you see that, that's fine. But this is an issue that is pretty much going to happen in Michigan anyway because of the federal law. And I think it's really a question personally of whether or not the state of Michigan has anything to do with the administration of it. And certainly I always believe that the lower levels of government are more accountable than the federal level of government, just because we're closer to them and we should be able to have more impact and make more changes as necessary. That's one of the arguments that Governor Snyder is making there. But let's listen to a couple of commentaries from Jim Hightower, our friendly populist commentator out of Austin, Texas, and then we're going to return to the press conference from just 2 days ago in Lansing about Medicaid expansion.
4 years ago, Michelle Obama picked up a shovel to make a powerful symbolic statement about America's food and farm future. She turned a patch of White House lawn into a working organic garden. So I'm guessing that now, as she begins another 4 years in the People's Mansion, the First Lady is asking herself, what next? What can I do this time around to plant a crop of common sense in our country's political soil that will link America's farmers, consumers, environment, and grassroots economy into one big harvest of common good? Thanks for asking, and I'm happy to offer a one-word answer to your query. Hemp. Plant a good, healthy stand of industrial hemp next to your organic garden. Yes, hemp is a distant cousin of marijuana, though the industrial variety of cannabis lacks the psychoactive punch of pot. Industrial hemp won't make anyone high, but it certainly can make us happy, because it would deliver a new economic and environmental high for America. Our nation is the world's biggest consumer of hemp products, from rope to shampoo, building materials to food. Yet the mad masters of our insane drug war have lumped hemp and marijuana together as Schedule I controlled substances, making our land of the free the world's only industrialized country that bans farmers from growing this benign, profitable, job-creating, and environmentally beneficial plant. This is Jim Hightower saying, as Michael Bowman, a Colorado farmer, so aptly asks, can we just stop being stupid? He's one of the leaders of a national bipartisan movement to legalize hemp production. As one small step, he's seeking 100,000 signatures on a White House petition that simply asked President Obama to include the words industrial hemp in his February 12th State of the Union speech. To sign the petition, go to this website, petitions.whitehouse.gov.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Big Ag has a big problem, but has come up with a neat solution. The problem is that the meat, eggs, and dairy that are sold to us as, quote, wholesome foodstuffs by such giants as Tyson, Smithfield, and Borden are actually produced in mammoth, mega-messy, monstrous factory farms. Known by the baleful industrial acronym CAFO, these confined animal feeding operations amount to animal concentration camps. They cram thousands of cows, pigs, chickens, and other pastoral creatures into torturously tiny cages enclosed in metal prison-like buildings. The animals never see the light of day, they're routinely dosed with antibiotics and growth hormones, and they're frequently ravaged by epidemic diseases. In turn, we human animals suffer from widespread salmonella, E. coli, and other food contaminants that are an inevitable byproduct of CAFO production, as well as suffering from the gross air and water pollution caused by the unbelievable mass of manure coming out of these animal factories. It's ugly in there, but such a reckless system produces big corporate profits, so they want to keep the uglies a secret from consumers. Problem is, in this age of watchdogs and whistleblowers with cell phone cameras and direct access to the public through YouTube, there's been a spate of barf-inducing exposés. But problem solved. Big Ag's lawyers and lobbyists have simply coughed up a nasty legalistic hairball called the Animal and Ecological Terrorism Act. Yes, it's an ag gag bill that criminalizes use of cameras to expose the horrors inside CAFOs and prosecutes participants as terrorists. This is Jim Hightower saying, you'd think such a repressive act would gag a legislature, but Iowa, Missouri, and Utah have already passed it, and at least 10 other states are considering it. To keep up and fight back, go to organicconsumers.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
This is WHFR, WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. And now we're going to return to the Medicaid expansion press conference.
Doctor's office reading the magazine called Highlights. I think they still have it. And in the Highlights, there was a puzzle, and the puzzle was a picture, and the question was, what doesn't belong in this picture? As I think about what doesn't belong in this picture, it might be me. The Small Business Association of Michigan endorses the expansion of Medicaid, and I'll tell you why. I consider it kind of an organizational epiphany about a decade ago, where we came to realize that the uninsured really matter to business. And whether we have thought of that, you know, directly or not, it became pretty clear to us how it works. And this is how it works. People get care. They go to our healthcare system and they get care. And if they can't pay for it, they still get care, but it becomes uncompensated care. Uncompensated care actually gets passed along to those who can pay. It's called cost shifting. It's been happening for a very long time. It's found its way into the base rates of health insurance for small businesses all across the state. And I would say it's a terrible business model that we take a growing burden of people who come without compensation and we shift it to a shrinking group of people who struggle to pay for health insurance. Whether you supported Obamacare or not, and we did not, one of the main elements of it is everybody in. And everybody in a system of health care with some form of payment is better for those who have had costs shifted to them for many, many years. We support this because we believe it ultimately can have can reduce the sort of piling on effect of cost shifting that's been happening to the paying customers for many years. So we'll be there in support of Medicaid expansion. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Nikoloff. I'm the executive director of the 8,000-member Michigan Osteopathic Association. We represent physicians, surgeons, students, and residents. We're the fastest-growing osteopathic association in the country, and we're the largest. We have the number one osteopathic medical school right down the street here at Michigan State University. We're very proud of that, and we know that we have the people to deliver the care. first and foremost, we have to have the people. We have the healthcare professionals. Now we need to make it work. The way to make it work is expand Medicaid. This is an opportunity. I look around here, I see a lot of familiar faces going back almost 30 years. 30 years, I have been, along with most everybody here, lobbying the legislature to expand Medicaid services and funding. This is the most exciting opportunity that I've experienced in my life. How can't we do this? $2 billion a year, $30 billion over the next decade. 100% coverage that $2 billion will pay for the next 3 years, and then after 2020, it's 90%. This is simple. Just do it. This is the right thing to do. The right thing to do, the best opportunity that's come our way in 30 years that I can think of. 450,000 people will get coverage that don't have it right now. Now, you've been to University of Michigan's football stadium? Four times that. Picture that right now. Four times that full of patients that will receive care if we expand Medicaid. Please expand Medicaid. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Rick Murdoch. I'm the executive director of the Michigan Association of Health Plans, representing 16 health plans that serve about 2.5 million citizens in this state through Medicare, commercial, and Medicaid products. I'd like to acknowledge with me today is Scott Wilkerson, who's with PHP's own health plan that serves Medicaid and is also CEO of the health insurance plan of Michigan serving the high-risk population. One of the key issues is access to care and quality of care. Michigan has been a national leader in Michigan in Medicaid managed care. Our members are constantly rated among the best in the country. In fact, the last rating from Consumer Reports, NCQA, was that 10 of the top 50 Medicaid plans are from Michigan and 6 of the top 25. Credit goes to the Department of Community Health for their administration of a contract with expectations of high performance and outcomes, and credit goes to our members for their innovation and services to the Medicaid beneficiaries. I say that because, as other speakers have noted, we are ready and prepared for expansion. The recent survey by MSMS and the University of Michigan, coupled with the research that our association has done, will demonstrate that the capacity to absorb the additional population from expansion is there. We don't have to build new systems. We don't have to create new policies or change contractors. We are ready for expansion. We expect most, if not all, of the expanded population will be enrolled in the Medicaid health plans, and our members are prepared for the expanded enrollment. If we do this, rather than receiving services in the hospital emergency department, Medicaid expansion provides the means to provide a medical home, access to needed primary care services, provision of timely preventive health care, and it will help to reduce the overall health care cost, including reducing the so-called hidden tax of uncompensated care that Rob talked about earlier. As we go forward after today, we intend with our partners here to work closely with the administration and the legislature to discuss how this investment will not only hold down cost, reduce the current uncompensated cost, as I mentioned, but will also improve Michigan's overall health status. I want to thank the governor for his announcement today, and I want to thank Sparrow for holding this press conference today so we could jointly and enthusiastically support Medicaid expansion. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jacqueline Morrison, State Director for AARP Michigan. I suppose I could just say ditto, but I won't. First, on behalf of our 1.4 million members who are today represented by Bill McCarty of Portage, we want to thank Governor Snyder. This is an exciting day for us, and I'm here to express our support and to urge our legislators in the state of Michigan to expand Medicaid coverage to Michigan residents with incomes up to 133% of the federal poverty line. It's clear from what we've heard so far today that Medicaid expansion will both save lives by expanding access to health care for people who desperately need it and save money. This issue is important to AARP because it is critically important to those between the ages of 50 and 64 who are not yet eligible for Medicare and have no health insurance coverage. In Michigan, during our country's economic recession, there were many 50 to 64-year-olds, through no fault of their own, who lost their jobs, lost their employer-paid health coverage. They now find themselves either looking for a job or struggling in low-wage jobs where they receive no health benefits and cannot afford to buy it on the market. The AARP Public Policy Institute analysis indicates that 12.2% of Michigan's population aged 50 to 64 is uninsured. The Institute further projected that expanding Medicaid as proposed will provide health coverage to an estimated 75,000 uninsured Michigan residents between the ages of 50 and 64. So expanding Medicaid will help tens of thousands of those in this age group in Michigan who've lost their jobs through no fault of their own, struggling in low-wage jobs, without health benefits, don't qualify for Medicare, and we all know someone like this. We all know someone like this. They're in our communities. They're in our churches. They're in our families. In my case, it's a sister with diabetes. They've paid in all their lives, but are now struggling to make ends meet and stay healthy. Older adults are particularly vulnerable to deterioration in function and health status if they do not have access to quality health care. And the ages between 50 and 64, preventive care at this point is more important than ever. I'm a witness. This is the time to catch those potentially debilitating chronic diseases that cause costly emergency room visits and even premature death. But there's something that we can do in Michigan, and so AARP is encouraging our state to do the right thing. Pursuing Medicaid expansion will save our state money, and that makes sense. Pursuing Medicaid expansion will save lives. That too makes sense. So Medicaid expansion is the right thing to do, both for the people who provide health care and for the people who need quality care access but currently lack it. We strongly support and urge the state of Michigan to participate in Medicaid expansion because it's the right thing to do and it just plain makes sense. So thank you, Governor.
Also, we have with us today Director Jim Hayman, who's over this program. Jim, I don't know if you want to say anything about the end. You okay? All right. We'll get you in questions and answers. We are at that point now. As you can see, we have a very enthusiastic and committed group of organizations to expand Medicaid, and we have the support of the governor. Let me open the panel now for questions. Let me give you one proviso. Stay on topic, please. We want to talk about Medicaid expansion here. And if you want to talk to folks later, you can go out that way about other topics. All right, let's begin.
Governor, can you talk more about the money?
Okay, can you help us, too, just by naming your organization?
Kyle Malin. I'm with the MERS newsletter. Governor, can you kind of explain the money involved here? How much money do you think that you're going to be able to save, put into that pot, and then have it be used when the state actually has to pay in 3 years?
Yeah, actually, it's significant, Kyle. I'll save the details for tomorrow because we'll actually provide a chart and detailed information. But to give some idea, just in the first year, in the 2014 budget, the number's about $206 million is about the savings number. So we're looking to put about $103 million away just in the first year alone. So that number would grow to several hundred million dollars. And so that's the point of saving half those dollar resources to really make sure it's available, one, to feather in any cost structures, and again, put that out for a significant amount of time. And then secondly, I think it's also prudent, because again, there's been a lot of challenges and issues on this topic. If there's something dramatic changing on the federal front, then we'll have some additional resources to make sure we don't suffer any major shock.
Do you know how much Michigan will have to pay in 3 years when we're going to have to kick in some money?
Yeah, we've got forecasts, and again, that'll be part of the numbers. I have to save some exciting stuff for tomorrow, so we got a nice chart for you tomorrow.
Governor, if the House Republicans wouldn't give you their simple marketplace program, why do you believe they'll give you this, which is much more complex and more costly?
Well, again, I think we've all been working hard together, and I appreciate it. I think the Republicans in the House in particular, we've had a lot of good dialogue since we had the health care exchange discussion, and I think we've moved much closer together on working together. So it's all very positive. So I don't consider this a major issue. This is more getting good information out to people, again, having a good public dialogue in the legislature, and I hope we can move forward. I think one of the exciting parts is look at the broad support here today. I think this is fabulous. All the groups from the medical community to the business community standing here to say this is a good thing to work together.
Governor, is there a timeline that you have to work before the feds say, okay, we're not going to work with you?
No, on the Medicaid expansion, it's really up to the states to make those decisions. And as a practical matter, what I would say is it'll be part of the message tomorrow, and I hope it gets a part of the approval of the budget, which I hope is end of May, early June, just as we've done the last 2 years.
How long would that savings account last us once we actually have to start switching it
up? Literally, that savings account could last until 2034, 2035. So it's a significant area in terms of savings and being thoughtful. Again, this is about being financially responsible, just like we would in a family. That's why I actually ask them to name it a health savings account. Just like you would be setting up at home, let's set up a health savings account here to cushion for shocks, for unexpected events, and then to have a thoughtful stream of dollars to minimize the cost for the long term so we can provide the best care and work as a team.
Governor, as a leadership in the legislature, do you need that they're going to support this or allow a bipartisan vote?
I don't have any real feedback on that. Again, we've started briefing people and talking to the leaders about this topic generally, but this is part of the overall budget presentation, so we have many other things on the table as part of this. This would be one of the two or three largest topics, though. There's some road funding that I'll be happy to talk about later, a couple other things that we're working on.
If you don't do this, what happens?
It could end up costing Michigan a lot of money is the way I view it, because literally you have a case where we're going to have more Michiganders uninsured. If you don't follow through with the way the system's set up with health exchanges coming in and such, there's a real gap that gets created for people below 100% of the poverty line, potentially in terms of how Medicaid and the exchange interact. So this is important. I believe this is a good opportunity to have a more integrated system in terms of making sure we're covering everyone. But part of the point there is that I said earlier, Tim, this isn't a stopping point. This is about covering people. Now it's incumbent on us to cover them efficiently in terms of better care at a lower cost. And the commitment of the people you heard today, they're committed to do that by a patient-centered medical home model as opposed to having an ER-oriented system. And that's really the issue, and that's the way I viewed the issue when I was reviewing it. I would say the same thing whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, and you know I tend to follow that philosophy. My answer is this is saving money and improving lives. This improves lives at an individual level where these people hopefully can have a great opportunity to have employment. Again, if you have health issues, they can keep you from having a job or make it difficult to hold the job you could otherwise hold. So it's a tremendous gain at the individual, the family level, and then if you look at the societal level or the governmental level, it is an opportunity to save costs because in many cases we're paying for this in some fashion through hidden charges, other pieces of the equation. Now it's up to us to be smarter and smarter about delivering services. That was great where Kim spoke about federally qualified healthcare centers. I think they're a great mechanism to say how do we help people that are lower income get better care. Many of the other people represent those things. This is the exciting part. Now we need to continue to do a better job of delivering, and they've been delivering well, so don't take that as a criticism at all. I just want to keep going.
What do you say to the argument that this $2 billion is not free money, that Washington is awash in debt, that we really can't afford this as a country?
I say, basically, why don't they look at Michigan and we can show them how to run things right? We do that with budgets, we do that with taxes, we do it with everything else, and we're just going to keep running.
But this is the argument being propelled by members of your own party, sir.
Again, we're going to keep moving forward with relentless positive action. This is just another exercise of being positive about saying better services at a lower cost to help people succeed. And when they're successful, we all win.
Governor, Chris Rodriguez from Michigan Protection and Advocacy, who represent people with disabilities. I first want to say thank you on behalf of the organization and people who represent. My question is, it is my understanding that the benefits and services provided to the beneficiaries of the exchange don't necessarily have to be on par with the benefits provided to typical beneficiaries of Medicaid. My question is, to what extent are you committed to making sure that both of those are on par with each other?
Yeah, I appreciate your support. I'll tell you, that's a concern I have with both the exchange and Medicaid. In some ways, there are still a lot of rules. It's actually simplified, but I think you're going to find an ongoing issue, but it's something that I'm going to be vigilant of to keep on looking about how do we make sure we run all these things right. And the challenge is when you start things like this, I'm sure there'll be challenges. But the main thing is I think we want to make sure we have a clear dialogue with the federal government to tell them that, you thought this would work, this isn't working as expected, how do we improve that together? Continuous improvement. So again, I don't want to fight with the federal government on this. I view this as how do you partner to do continuous improvement as long as citizens are gaining.
All right, last question, please.
Great.
Okay.
We've been listening for most of today's new WHFR Journal show for February the 8th, 2013, to a press conference that was held this last Wednesday in Lansing by supporters for Medicaid expansion. It is not something that is going to happen automatically in Michigan. It is something that all of the people you've just heard with their comments, including Governor Snyder, say is going to be good for Michigan in many ways. It is doable financially. It's going to benefit a wide, wide range of people for a wide number of many, many reasons. Of course, all the reasons expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Thank you for listening today. Just a final note, just for the clarity of it, in both of the Dearborn papers this week, Dearborn Times Herald and Dearborn Press and Guide, they have mentioned the Dearborn Education Foundation's Mardi Gras event next Tuesday, February 12th. That's during the day, sort of, afternoon, 3:30, I think, until 9 p.m. And that's at the Dearborn Hills Golf Course. I want to make sure there's more than one golf course in this area. The Dearborn Hills Golf Course, 1300 South Telegraph. Tickets are $20 in advance or $25 at the door. That is to benefit the Dearborn Public Schools, K-12. That's all fine and good. The other Mardi Gras event is going to be, more literally, it's three jazz artists doing Dixieland and some Mardi Gras stylings is a benefit tomorrow night, Saturday night, big time Saturday night event from 7 to 11 p.m. at Joe Vaccari's Andiamo Italian Steakhouse. It's a benefit for us. That's right, the station to which you are listening. And we hope you can make it out there. It's just a $5 admission. All that money goes directly to WHFR, thanks to Joe Vaccari's Andiamo Italian Steakhouse and